away from the baggage carousel. That's all I ask. Just take one small step back. Clear the space in front of the belt and only move forward when you spot your bag. That's all that has to happen. No pushing, no shoving. Everybody wins. And yet that never happens. And it bugs me. I kind of want to yell at everyone, and surely all the other passengers do too, right? Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the Traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're having a bit of a whinge. We're letting it all hang out. See, we're mostly pretty happy travellers here at Flight of Fancy. We mostly have a pretty good time out there. But there are some elements of the travel experience that get on our nerves. And today, we're going to see if we can fix them. No more crowding of the baggage carousel. No more begging for travellers' spare change. No more selfie sticks. No more drones. Is that so much to ask? We shall see. Joining me to vent their spleens today, I have two of Traveller.com.au's finest scribes, long-term travellers who've developed their fair share of bugbears. First up, she's a frequent collaborator on Flight of Fancy who wishes people would stop taking photos with their iPads, Uta Jonker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Also joining us, he's a travel writer and author who hates selfie sticks with a passion, Keith Austin.
Hey, hello.
Great to have you along, guys.
Thank you.
So is it okay to have a bit of a whinge every now and then? We're not just old and grumpy, are we?
I'm a POM, originally. So
this is what you do.
It's part of the...
This is natural territory.
It's a genetic makeup. Yeah, I can have a whinge with the best of them.
Right. What about you, Uta? Did the thing just start to bug you after a while?
Oh, Ben, you have no idea. And in fact, I'm a little bit miffed that you started with the baggage carousel, because that's my bugbear. Yeah. But I actually had an experience in Easter Island recently where I was standing back. And I'm tall and I'm happy to stand back. Mm-hmm. And there was just a little window where I could see the baggage carousel, and then someone came and blocked half of it. And I was like, I mean, I know me. I get grumpy. And I'm like, relax. Just let it go by. And then someone else came and filled the blank. And it was like, oh, come on. And I just kind of quietly lost it. And I went and tapped them on the shoulder. And went, excuse me, you're standing in front of me. I can't see. And she's like, but I want to see. I went, well, I want to see too. She goes, and by the way, don't you tap me on the shoulder like that. And was like, whoa, you win, lady. You're better at this than I am. Yeah.
See, what she doesn't realise is that sort of, you know, 20 years of travelling rage pent up that you're finally getting off your chest, and she just happened to be the person.
And then, of course, while she's having a go at me, my baggage has gone around and gone back out the other right. way.
I think Japan is the only country I've seen where people dutifully stand back behind the line at the baggage carousel.
I love travelling in Japan because everyone does the right thing.
Right.
And, you know, everyone is polite and everyone is considerate and everyone else makes you feel like you're the idiot who's not obeying the rules. But it's a society that's well-mannered and it's about being considerate of other people, basically.
It is.
And I don't know why the Japanese are the only people in the world, but they are.
They are.
I was at an airport... I think it was a couple of years ago now. I think it was in Germany where they'd actually drawn a line on the ground.
Yeah.
A couple of, like a metre or so, away from the carousel.
Yeah.
And people had to stand back.
Okay. Yeah, okay, but Keith, the thing is, those lines are in the airports all around the world, but there are people standing on them.
It drives me completely mad as well. It seems so utterly selfish of everybody.
Yeah.
Totally selfish.
If everyone took a step back, then
everyone would be able to see.
And I don't get the kind of mentality where there are people standing back and you decide to go and stand in front of them.
Yeah, obviously I want to see where my bags are too.
Yeah, I've got bags too. I'm not just standing out here because the airport's
spend my
cool.
Day. That's a good start to the whinging, guys.
Yeah.
Good work. Excellent. Now, Uta, I asked you to name some of yours, and you put your bugbears into three different categories, which I found amusingly efficient, and I really enjoyed it.
But other people don't.
And you began with things that annoy you for no particular reason, like people taking photos with their iPads.
See, here is the thing. Intellectually, Ben, if you and I are at the Taj Mahal or the Eiffel Tower or wherever, and you take your iPad and you take a photo, that has no impact on me at all.
It doesn't.
It drives me mad. And I just want to steal that iPad off you and smash it over my knee to stop you doing that again. And I'm really not sure why.
It bugs me as well. I look at people and, what are you doing? Why? What?
What is it about it?
It doesn't take good photos. Why are you walking around with your iPad? Have you noticed this blocking?
Yeah. It's when you think you can take really good photographs with your tiny little phone that you can put in your pocket or slip in your top pocket.
Yeah.
What are you doing walking around with the equivalent of a dinner plate?
I'll just tuck this under my arm and hang out with it all day. It's like, really?
I mean, laptops take photos too. Why don't you take that? With you?
Yeah, exactly.
Point it at the thing and press enter.
Is this just that when someone takes a photo with an iPad, you can't avoid seeing it because it's quite cumbersome and they sort of have to turn themselves rather than turning the iPad. And it's just sort of like, get out of my vision. Yeah. I don't want to look at you.
Because it
you
takes know. Up a lot of space. Yeah, and if you're trying to take a photo of said site at the same time, you're definitely going to have their iPad in your photo.
Yeah, whereas five people could be taking a photo with their phone and you might not notice them.
Yeah. It's Although, just... of course, if they have a selfie stick, then you probably will notice.
I don't think we should even go there. Things will get broken in the studio. It's like selfie sticks. I went to the MCA in...
Sydney.
Yeah. Only recently, to see a video installation. And everywhere you went, people were standing in front of the video or the exhibit taking selfies with selfie sticks. It's like everybody was doing it. And
I think that's the problem. You know, when there were one or two selfie sticks around, they were kind of annoying, but, you know, it wasn't that much of a problem.
Yeah.
Now every single person has got one. And if they don't, there's someone standing there next to the site selling about 20 of them.
Yeah.
and so now it's just this sea of antennae poking up and poking into you. And, you know, people stand on the middle of a pathway and hang it out there so they can get a good shot of themselves and you're trying to get around it. And I mean, I guess, you know, part of this is mass tourism. It's just the fact that there are so many people at so many of the famous sites now. But the other half of it is that they're all carrying selfie sticks.
And I think the other part of it is, you know, if you really have to have a selfie stick, okay, fine, but could you be quick about it?
Yeah.
And kind of know that you're impacting other people? Like, if you give me an embarrassed smile and go, sorry, 2 secs, fine. But then if you're swapping your blue jumper for a red jumper so you've got the same shot in a different version, it's like, oh, seriously? You know,
I think also for me it's there's the again, I'm English, so, you know, we're supposed to be terribly polite about these things, and I find the whole concept of going to, let's just say, the Grand Canyon, and rather than looking at the Grand Canyon and saying, wow, this is more amazing than I ever believed it could be. This is, look, it's nature. No, there's some dick there putting their head in the way saying, here's the Grand Canyon. With my face in front of me. And I just look at them and go, God, turn around, you utter fool. You know, it's like, really?
I mean, there's such an obvious something. There's such an obvious vanity to it, which I think does mark us out as grumpy old people, because younger people aren't so concerned about that you know, that public showing of
I think there's two types of annoyance, and the one that is bigger is when people are doing something you would never do. So I can really work up a head of steam over the selfie stick, over the baggage carousel, because I don't do those things. You know, I don't do those things. I don't think that's proper behaviour. And so therefore, I can get really cross with you. Whereas if it's something that I've done on occasion, I go, oh, really? Yeah, okay. We all do that sometimes.
Well, I think drones fall into that category of things that I don't do that other people do as well. And I'm jealous of their photos, because drone photos look amazing. But having a thing buzzing around you really bugs me. Particularly, you know, I've stayed in campsites in national parks, and they're these beautiful, serene places, and you're really enjoying the peace and the wildlife and listening to the birds and everything, and then someone in the camp next door fires up their drone and starts flying it around.
Oh, look, I was in Tasmania on the weekend, and, you know, I saw so many beautiful things in Tasmania, but the most beautiful was the sign at the start of the national park saying no drones allowed, you know, and it's just on a reasonable cost-benefit analysis. One person gets amazing footage. Everyone else gets cheesed off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And like I say, I am jealous of those people with the amazing footage because they look really cool, but it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Maybe someone should start flogging, like, drone guns. I'm thinking something that shoots, I don't know, an electromagnetic pulse or something.
And it just drops
bang,
over, yeah.
And down it goes. And they can't trace it back to you.
Right.
You know, you're just standing there going, oh, mate, what happened to your drone?
Wow, that's weird.
That's
isn't it?
Terrible.
Just dropped
poor
out of the
old
sky.
Thing just dropped out of the sky. Now we can listen to the birds.
I wrote a story about this a few months ago, actually, about the things that I wish would stop happening in travel that are ruining it. And one of the things I mentioned was people who say that they've done a country or they've done a city. You know, I've done Asia, I've done Europe now, which to me just seems like such a ridiculous concept. But Keith, you also mentioned the people who say that they want to do as the locals do.
Yeah, this is the thing that always drives me mad. It's like this you know, a lot of travel, especially with backpackers and people like that, there's a one-upmanship about the whole thing. And, yeah, you know, I've done the place differently to you. And they, you know, they say, you know, I went so-and-so and I did, you know, this place the way the locals do it. And I just always think, no, you haven't. No, what you want the locals to take you somewhere and do something that's touristy.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, because we are tourists.
We go there, yeah.
We want to see the Taj Mahal. You know, yeah. I was born and brought up in London, yeah? It was only when I came to Australia and then went back to London that I actually went into Westminster Abbey.
Yeah, right.
I never gone in there.
Yeah.
The tourists do that.
Yeah,
yeah, I've seen the outside, you know, I guess what the inside was like. You know, I'd seen a few royal weddings. I didn't know, need to go back. But you don't want to do what the locals do because they just go to work, come home, struggle, watch a video, go to sleep.
Yeah. I actually read, there was a story a while back of someone was saying that it was like an anti-Bondi Beach thing. They were saying that Bondi is not the real Sydney and tourists shouldn't go there. They should go to what the real Sydney is, which is the West, like Parramatta and stuff. And I was thinking, that is a terrible idea for a tourist. Like, you don't want to do that. You want to go to Bondi.
Of course you
do. You want to see the Opera House.
Yeah, as you say, take them to Bondi Beach. Yeah. Although I took a friend of mine to Bondi Beach once, and I thought, I'll bring them down Campbell Parade, you know, and as you turn left at the bottom there, and there's Bondi Beach, you know, in all its glory, and she took one look at it, and she said, is that it?
This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. To us, Intrepid is an attitude. It's a bold curiosity, an openness to discover new cultures, and a healthy respect for the difference. Our travellers choose to see the world in a way that builds human connection, supports local communities, respects the environment, and draws us all a little bit closer together. Because now more than ever, the world needs more intrepid people. Find out more at intrepidtravel.com.
I'm here with Keith Austin and Uta Juncker. And now, guys, we've been talking about a lot of sort of lighthearted stuff so far, but let's get into some of the things that might actually be physically ruining travel. And one of the interesting things that I'd like to talk about is Airbnb. Airbnb and sort of these house share or renting out apartments, in some ways to me, I use them and I love them because I love, you know, you're going to love this, Keith, but I love that feeling of being a local and living in a normal house and doing normal things. And I really enjoy immersing myself in a city like that. But at the same time, they're driving rents up and they're driving locals out of these places that they've always lived in, and they're changing the sort of fabric of these societies, and by staying there you're sort of contributing to that. Is that something that you think about, Uta?
Absolutely. And it's a major concern, but at the same time, if I had a family, I would sell Airbnb because it's more cost effective and it works better for me. So you wonder, where is the solution? Is it developing a new kind of holiday accommodation? But it's also just the sheer number of people using them.
Yeah.
You know,
and again, I guess it's like selfie sticks, where if there's just a couple around,
exactly,
it's fine. But once it hits that critical mass, it becomes an issue.
Exactly.
And I know in places like Berlin, it's a real problem because you have these suburbs like Kreuzberg and Neukölln, which are these sort of traditionally poorer areas and kind of homes of alternative culture. And the people who live there and made it what it is are now being driven out because the rents are going so high because everyone's coming in to stay in Airbnbs.
The rents are going up. And also, I mean, the rents are the more serious thing. But, you know, I'd be really miffed if a whole bunch of apartments in my building were Airbnb because people don't care. Do you know what I mean? Yep. If you're there for 3 days, you don't care if you're coming in late at night, if you're noisy, if you're whatever.
Yep.
And it sort of destroys that idea of this is a place that is special to us and we all work
for
together.
Who live in the city.
So it really wrecks the community spirit as well.
I have a friend who lives in Brussels and she has exactly that. She lives in quite a sort of central area and there's about 3 or 4 Airbnb apartments in her building. And, you know, Belgians, they're quite Germanic in a way that they have all of their rubbish is separated into different recycling bins and everything. And all the people who stay there, they don't care about that. They're just chucking their rubbish wherever and they're coming and going at whatever time of night. And it's a nightmare for the people who live there. Mm. Do you use these things?
No, I never have.
For that reason?
I don't know, to be honest. I stay in hotels or motels, or, you know, if I'm in London, you know, I stay with my mum in her council house. So it's not something that I've ever done myself, but I certainly know that they can be a problem. And I have friends who do Airbnb be their places, and they're always on Facebook complaining about the state that the last lot left it in, and oh my God, they've done this, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, you signed up for it. What do you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
I understand the pros and cons, and you know, in some areas they are a problem.
Yeah. And what about mass tourism in general? Because there's never been more people travelling than there is right now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big problems. You know, places like Venice and Barcelona are overrun.
Yeah.
And I quite understand. It's a double-edged sword, you know, for the locals, because they want the tourists in there to begin with. But then when they get too many of them, they don't want them.
Yeah.
I think it's probably, if you are a tourist, if you're going travelling to a place, quite apart from the making it nice for yourself, don't go to Venice in August or July. I went there a few years ago in January.
Right. Well, I was just in Rome in January, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was so good.
It's cold, but you know, wear a hat, put a scarf on. You know, it's not the Arctic. Venice, for instance, in if you go after New Year, but you go before Carnivale in January, the place is empty.
Yeah,
you know, it's cold, especially on those outer areas. It's freezing, but it's just beautiful because it's empty, and I'm sure Barcelona's the same.
Yeah.
And also,
I found Rome, everyone was just seemed really happy and relaxed. All the people who lived there, maybe it's because they were getting a break from the hordes.
But you can imagine, you know, July and August, it's hot, it's sweaty, it's full of people, it's full of buses, and I think part of that, one of the things that happened last year, I don't mind a cruise, I like a cruise, but I lobbed up in somewhere like Ketchikan or somewhere in Alaska, and five cruise ships arrived on the same day.
Right.
And
into a small town.
Disgorges all these people into this small town. So it's just
who don't have to actually spend any money in that town, which I think is a problem in Venice and Barcelona especially, where all these people are getting off and wandering around for the day, but all their meals and drinks are already paid for somewhere else. So they don't actually have to inject any money into the economy.
It's a problem, you know. More people are travelling, more people can travel, more people can afford to travel, and why shouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all do, and we love it. I mean, it's a fairly hypocritical thing to start telling people not to. There was a really amusing piece of graffiti in Barcelona that someone found that said, "Gaudi hates you." But what's your take on this, Uwe?
Well, as you say, I mean, yes, I'm agreeing with everything you say, but at the same time, I travel a lot,
but
I think it's that, you know, it goes back to our first point about showing consideration and the idea that you're going to laugh at me for being Germanic again, but that's okay, I'm used to it. Rights come with responsibilities, and, you know, okay, sure, you've got a budget, you've got to meet, that's fine, but if you're going to a place, that place should get something from you being there.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, and this is one of the things I think about Airbnb, the way that people can sort of act responsibly if they want to take advantage of something like that is, you know, treat the place like it's your own home. You know,
separate your recycling.
Totally, and you know, go out in that, you're staying in that local community because you want to be in there. So go to the cafe, go to the restaurant, you know, spend your money in that community so that at least you're giving something back rather than just being a body on the street.
Yeah, and if the woman from upstairs complains about your music at midnight, don't turn it up just to annoy her. Act like you would at home, where I hope you might turn it down.
Yeah. Now, one thing I've noticed I'm still baffled that this even exists, is a thing called begpacking. I don't know if you guys have heard.
I have heard of it. I've never personally encountered it, thank God. But I think you have, Ben.
I have. I've seen numerous people doing it, particularly in Saigon in Vietnam, I saw recently. So basically the idea is that travellers go to, usually it's what seems to be developing countries, and basically beg for money from other travellers. I saw people with little signs that said, "Lost my passport, lost my wallet, you know, need to get home, give me some money." And the first person you see that, and you think, oh, that's kind of weird. I thought they were sort of, you know,
embassies that
could help you with that sort of thing. But, you know, and then you walk past another person with exactly the same sign and you think, hang on a minute. And it's people begging for money to fund their holidays. And to me, it's just insane. They're sort of this idea that you're entitled to enough to do that. That you can have enough money to be able to go on holidays and then think it's okay to beg from other people.
I've never experienced it. I'm like you. I've I've never seen it, but it sounds totally reprehensible.
And can I say the big packers of the world should be happy that I have an encounter, because you get me on the wrong day and I'm going to pour my drink into your carefully curated collection of paper money.
Yeah, and it seems to me like it's sort of a point of pride for some people. Like there are people who... There was someone who rode a bike through South America for 4 months without any money whatsoever. And she did this to raise money for charity by leaning on people in developing countries to give her food and accommodation and everything, and got people to sponsor her to then give money to charity. And that just seems like such bizarre logic to me.
It's, you know what, if you're in a position where you can travel to another country, you're already in a very privileged position. So just, you know, grow up.
Have you guys encountered sort of slum tourism, basically, you know, tours of favelas in Rio de Janeiro, of shanty towns in South Africa, this idea of going to look at poor people as a tourism experience?
Oh, I've done it.
Yeah.
But I choose my operators carefully. I've done it in Rio. I've done it in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And the tours that I did were run by people from the community.
Yeah. So how do you do that research? How do you find out which are the good ones?
Google. Read Traveller. So it's, well, I think, you know, if you click on the website and you read the description of it, if it says come and gawk at poor people, that's probably not the responsible tour. But, you know, the ones I went with talked about how part of the profits went back to the community. And the one I did in Rio, that would be probably a decade ago, I think. Yeah. It was one of the
early ones.
Yeah,
I did one in Rio
ones.
And it was really good. It was run by a woman who lived in the community and she was very much a part of that community.
I think I may have done the same one. And it was at a time when the favelas were getting a lot of press. It was before the big cleanup campaign. And so it was this idea of, look, everyone who lives in the favela isn't a criminal. Come and meet us. And I thought that was a terrific thing.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Yeah. And it was if it's done right, it can be fantastic.
Yeah, and it just does knock those preconceptions where it's like, oh, look, they've got internet cafes. They've got gyms.
Right.
You know, there is a warfare in the streets.
They have a post office where they go and collect their mail because there's no actual addresses or anything. They just have it named and sent to the post office.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. On that, there was, I'm not sure if it's still there anymore, but near Bloemfontein in South Africa, there was a fake shanty town, which was actually a hotel and convention centre. And people were encouraged to go and stay there in sort of work groups to experience the shanty town. But they had Wi-Fi and air conditioning and everything.
And
it's pretty horrendous.
Yeah, okay, people, that's wrong.
Right. That
we're not approving of that one.
That is the other end of the scale. Uta, you are also convinced that there are some personal vendettas against you in the world of travel.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, things that annoy me about travel are the people who pick on me.
Right.
Like, recently I was attempting to leave Bolivia. I was on the plane. It was because the plane leaves at 4 a.m. I had been up for more than 24 hours. It was raining. And in that sort of half-dazed way, when the man came on the plane, everyone's got their seatbelts on, we're ready to go. Plane doors open, man comes on going, Ute Hunker, instead of just putting my head down, I just went, that'll be me, and it's pronounced Junker.
Oh boy, good start.
And he said, come with me. And I'm like, wait, he goes, come with me, bring bags. And I was like, oh dear. So we're out in the dark, on the tarmac, in the rain, and he's like, open your bags. He's got my suitcase there. And I'm like, I'm an experienced traveller. Yeah. I will not panic. What has clearly happened is my bag has gone through the X-ray machine and there is some shape in there that looks a little bit suspicious. I open my bag. He just starts rummaging around. He is not looking for something in particular. He's just having a look. I'm like,
just a random search?
Just a random search. Yeah. Once I was already on the plane.
Wow.
He's rummaging through it. And at this point, I'm just getting grumpy now. You know, I'm like, let me go back to my seat and sleep. Then he sort of gestured and said I should open it. When it came to shut it, he started shutting it. And I was like, don't you do that, and slapped his hand. And he looked at me in disbelief. And I'm like holding up the skirt on top and going, this was rolled up neatly like this. This jumper, this was folded neatly like that. And he is just staring at me in total disbelief. And I sort of, when I looked back on it later, I thought his silent thought bubble must have been, they usually just run back onto the plane.
Yeah,
but when
right.
I told the story to my brother, he went, no, the silent thought bubble was, just like my sister.
Yeah, she is awesome. Keith, how are you with airport security? Does it bug you? You know, getting
not at all.
No?
Not at all. I don't find a problem with it if they want to stop me and search me and
it's more other people in queues.
I really don't care.
Oh, look. Like, did you not expect to have to take all your bangles?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Ben, you know all my pressure points, don't you?
I think. Look, you know, when I go through customs and security, by the time I get to security, I've taken everything out of my pockets. It's all in my jacket that I'm wearing. I take the jacket off. I put it.
Yeah, see, I'm quite happy standing behind you.
Boom! I'm straight the way through. But that's, you know, experience. You do it a lot. Yeah. You know.
But it doesn't have to be in a queue. You are standing in a queue for 20 minutes looking aimlessly at the people in front of you.
Yeah.
Look at what they're doing.
I don't mind. I don't mind that. The thing that drives me absolutely insane is when you're on the airplane and it lands and it finally stops and everyone jumps up. And they all start taking their bags down. Yeah. And you just look at them going, where do you think you're going? You aren't going anywhere. And I always like the aisle seat. So, you know, because I'm a big guy, I can hang over a little bit. So I'm always in the aisle seat. And there will always be the two people next to me will be going, you know, well, come on,
you make a move.
Because I want to get my bags out. And I have to get up. And I'm thinking, well, where are we going? We're going to stand here for 15 minutes now. All of you. The whole plane gets up.
But you're going to be ready to go when those doors open.
I think you can tell a lot about a destination by the way everyone behaves when the plane touches down. You know what you're in for by how everyone else is behaving.
But do you know a technique that I use very, very rarely? But when I do, it actually works. Is to actually expect the worst. And when it happens, to kind of go, huh. I was right. I was at a domestic airport the other day, and the person who was employed just to check that, basically to stand there and check that all the stuff goes on the belt, he was just fiddling with everything. Like something would come near him and he'd turn it slightly to the right or slightly to the left, or it was in a tray and he would move it out of the tray, or it wasn't in a tray and he would put it in a tray. And of course, so this was the slowest queue in the airport. Mm-hmm. And I just went, he's going to touch every single item that comes past him. And I thought, right. And I just watched him, and he did. And I felt such a sense of triumph. Even though I was stuck there for 15 minutes.
Yeah, look, like, you've got to amuse yourself somehow.
Yeah, it was
you?
Like, yeah. look, there's a tiny little handbag. Don't miss it. I was like, yes, you've got it.
Now, guys, we've done a fair bit of whinging today, so I think it's probably fair that we at least talk about some of the things that we love about travel. You know,
you mean we have to be positive
we
now.
Do, yeah. The things that are making travel easier, things that are making travel more enjoyable. Keith, what would you say? What's really making your life easier these days?
I think when I look back on... I did a lot of backpacking when I was in my 20s around Europe and Israel and places like that. And I remember my mother, when I finally got back after just over a year, just going, I didn't hear from you for like 2 months at a time. You could have been dead. And I'd say, well, you know... write to me at Poste Restante. I don't know if you remember Poste Restante, but, you know, you used to just go to a post office and there would perhaps be some letters or something. And I wasn't much, you know, for sending postcards. You know, it cost too much and I couldn't be asked, basically. I couldn't be bothered, basically. And I think now that, to a certain extent, the ability to be contactable and... you know, to be available is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not always constant.
Yeah.
But it's up to you.
Yeah.
You know, how available you want to be. But I think not just for you, but for your, you know, especially if you're young and you're travelling and your parents or whoever can get in touch with you online or whatever,
I mean,
mobiles,
etc. You can be Skyping your parents from 30,000 feet.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing. I mean, a lot of what's happened in the last, you know, 20 years or so with the online space and just being able to be in a place and go, well, where am I?
Yeah.
And get up a map.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I was going to say, I mean, to me, mobile phones have just absolutely revolutionized travel.
It's,
you know, everything you need is in this little box in your pocket. You know, you've got your map there. You've got hotel bookings. You can find out restaurant reviews.
You can do translations.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's completely changed travel, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. And just the internet generally, that you can really research a destination before you go. Because I can remember the days when you used to go, so I'm going to Rome. So do you know somewhere good to eat?
Right, yeah.
You know, and while there's still a great joy to be had in finding your own place and making your own discoveries. But knowing that you've got, you know, two of your six dinners, you know where you want to eat.
And it's totally up to date as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember
instead
traveling.
Of the guidebooks.
Yes. Yeah. I remember traveling through China in about 1985 with a Lonely Planet guidebook that was like 4 or 5 years right. old, you know. It was a great book to have.
Yeah.
But a lot of it had changed and was, you know, not quite up to date. But I think the fact that now, you know, that information is there and it's immediate is fantastic.
In a way, it sort of takes away a little bit of the adventure, but it sort of, you know, there's no such thing as a bad hostel anymore because they all have to be good. They're all being reviewed every day.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of, I mean, I can remember sort of rocking up to towns in South America, small towns, and kind of having to work out how I would get on from there. You know, is there a bus and it only goes on Tuesdays?
Yeah.
You know, and it's Wednesday. Yeah. So the ease of travel, it's never been easier to travel.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Yeah. Now, guys, just to finish up very quickly, if you could change one thing about travel right now, what would it be? Easy question, you know, no pressure.
God.
You start, Ben.
All right. I'll start. I'm just going to say blanket ban on selfie sticks. They're gone. No more.
Yeah.
That's just going to make, you know, it's actually, you know, technically it's not going to make my life any different at all, but I would feel so much better.
Oh, well, I'm going to go with the baggage carousel because almost every trip you're at the baggage carousel and it just, I like having new things to get irate over and I'm bored with that one.
I would like to see... I would like to see the bigger hotel chains stop charging for Wi-Fi, frankly.
Good one.
I think that's an utter rip-off.
Yeah.
When you can go down the road and there's a hostel run by two people. You know, if you're a backpacker these days, every hostel will have free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And yet if you go to, you know, a 4-star, 5-star hotel and suddenly they want to charge you $20 a day...
Yeah.
You know,
and this Australia is a big offender in this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's an absolute rip-off.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I don't enjoy, you know, I travel a lot. It's business, blah, blah, blah. You need the Wi-Fi. But every time I get, and I click on that, you know, intranet, and you go, you're joking, right?
Yeah.
This room's costing X amount. And
it's robbery.
It's daylight robbery. And I think I'd like to see the back of it, basically.
Excellent. Yeah. All right, well, Uta and Keith, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you very much, yes.
If you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app, and we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.